The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Oh, we've got so much for you today. We've got exclusive stuff you're not going to hear anywhere else. We're down to the final four in Monson Madness, where you have picked the best sound bites of 2018. And we're down to the final four now. So we'll have that for you a little bit later. And coming up at 12:30, you may recall, a week ago, I was talking about Tim Iman, because he had sent out an email saying that Attorney General Bob Ferguson's vendetta against him because of Iman's anti-tax activism. He said that it has led to Iman filing for bankruptcy and getting a divorce. And I tried to get Tim on the show when he sent that email out to his supporters and the media. And he declined our invitation. And I said, I find him a little exasperating because I have supported most of his initiatives, many of them, not all of them. I'm not a blind supporter, but I've generally given him a platform. And when something personal comes out like that, that's not fun to talk about, I would like him to come on then as well. And so I talked about how exasperated I was with him. We are going to talk exclusively with Tim Iman about getting a divorce, about bankruptcy, about the tax activism. I'll ask him if it's been worth it. Because, you know, I would say on balance, and by the way, you know, he's become such a demon to politicians. But all Iman does is get stuff on the ballot, and then the voters get to decide if they want to be anti-tax. But I'll talk to him about all of that coming up at 12:30 this afternoon. So we got a lot of stuff straight ahead of us. Let's get right to our top story.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Speaking of exasperating, you know, we've got the drug vagrant crisis all around our region. And we have politicians who not only are not interested in real solutions, but they have made the problem much, much worse by making this the number one magnet destination in the country for drug vagrants. And I tell you what, I'm working with some people right now on the stats. We have had so many violent attacks, rapes, attempted rapes on women. And in almost every one of the cases, these are men who have come here from other parts of the country. And we are seeing that while our local politicians have tried to tell us, raise your taxes, you're supporting your neighbors. These are the kids you went to elementary school with, and they've just fallen on hard times. And the accused child rapist, former mayor, he tried peddling that bogus survey that said most of the drug vagrants in our region are homegrown. And anybody who's out on the streets, anybody who knows the reality of this situation, knows that we are bringing them in from other parts of the country. And there are a lot of people, you know, neighbors who have had their homes broken into, the business community that is seeing it getting tougher and tougher. And they're not NIMBYs. They're just realists. And they're saying, we just can't keep living with this right in our neighborhood. Well, let's talk about what's going on right now in Seattle's Queen Anne neighborhood, where a lot of business owners are upset because they weren't told about a homeless shelter being built in Lower Queen Anne. Channel 4, they have this story up at comonews.com. They did a great story on this. They talked to one of the business owners, a guy named Robert Wilson, with Wilson Marine Works. And the business people, the people who have to actually manage money and make budgets and pay taxes, they know how the city has and the region has completely mismanaged this whole situation.
What the city and the county and the state are spending on the homeless right now, we could buy them all houses in Bellevue.
And so then Channel 4 talked to Dow Constantine. And Dow Constantine, listen to this, because with all of the upset neighbors, listen to the disdain that Dow Constantine has for his constituents.
Sometimes you just have to do what you think is right, and that's why I was elected. And we have a crisis around homelessness.
So it doesn't matter if the neighbors are upset. He was elected to just do what's right. But Dow Constantine, by making his own decisions, has been a huge part of this drug problem. When we do things like put heroin death sites in King County, which is the plan, where people can come and get injected under the watchful eye of government, when King County has legalized heroin and meth and every single drug by saying we will not prosecute personal possession amounts, it is the policies of people like Dow Constantine and the people underneath him that has created this problem. And so then they build this shelter that is going to be a nightmare for that community. And I'm going to play that soundbite again because, again, this is the disdain that politicians have for us and our opinions and the reality that we have to deal with.
Sometimes you just have to do what you think is right. And that's why I was elected. And we have a crisis around homelessness.
It's also delusional, that soundbite. The reason you were elected, Dow Constantine, is because you have a D next to your name on the ballot. You weren't elected because you're some brilliant statesman leader. You were elected because you had some name recognition and you're a Democrat. And that's all it takes here. And that's to the shame of the voters that that's all it takes. But it gives these politicians a greatly inflated sense of self-worth. Yes, they elected me and I'm going to do what's right. Well, you've been one of the architects of the destruction of this region in regards to the drug problem. And you're flying by the seat of your pants with this problem, with this crisis, has been a huge part of the reason. So don't tell us that you're now some, you know, brilliant mechanic who's going to figure out a way to get this problem solved. And to be so disdainful of the business community. Channel 4 also talked with Dan Heimdall, who owns Taylor Brake Service.
That's typical Seattle and King County bureaucracy to shove it down your throat.
Yep, that's what they do. They create the problem, then they ask you to fund the solution, even if you don't want the solution. Mark Ellerbrook is a regional housing manager. And he says, anybody can come to the shelter.
It's completely voluntary. People can come when there's space available.
And so it sounds like from his description that it'll be one of those shelters, low barrier. You're not going to have to be clean. You're not going to have to straighten out your life. And I was talking with friends this morning about there are organizations like Union Gospel Mission. And they say, we'll give you a meal. We'll give you a bed. But you got to get in treatment. You have to stay clean. You can't use while you're eating and sleeping here because they want to change lives. They want to turn lives around and not just perpetuate a problem, not just give people a taxpayer-funded place where they can slowly kill themselves. And that's the problem that we are facing now. The guy that they talked to from Wilson Machine, Robert Wilson, they're tired of it, these business people.
They rob us continually.
And it's a problem that's just not going away.
It's incumbent upon us to try to see how we can use all of our resources to help people who are experiencing homelessness.
Okay. That is not helping people. These low-barrier shelters are giving people a place where they can continue to kill themselves. So, but Dow Constantine's on it. He was elected, you know. So sometimes you have to do unpopular things. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead, big local.
And then we see all the crimes that are happening. The story of what happened to this woman in West Seattle, yesterday. It is so heartbreaking. And if you've seen the surveillance video, it's frightening. A 71-year-old woman who works in a convenience store on California Avenue in West Seattle. A man walked in. He had a knife in one hand and a pair of handcuffs in the other. And on the surveillance video, you see a brutal attack. He is swinging the handcuffs. He is slashing with the knife at this 71-year-old woman, who very likely would have been killed if a delivery driver and customer hadn't been walking by the store and they saw the assault taking place and they were able to pull the woman to safety. The woman's daughter is Dodie Nelson. She talked to our news partners at Cairo 7.
Okay, my mom, first of all, is 71 years old. How I heard the way he came in is he didn't care. He just wanted somebody.
And the guy just wanted cash. And like I said, from the surveillance video, it is a brutal attack.
She was covered in blood. Literally covered in blood.
And, you know, bless the delivery man and the customer who put themselves in harm's way. They pulled this woman to safety.
He saved my mom's life. Thank you so, so much. Words cannot express how thankful I am to them, really.
So we're seeing crimes like this all over the region. I got some others that I'll share with you a little bit later this afternoon. But middle of the day, convenience store in West Seattle, and a 71-year-old woman brutally attacked. But Dow Constein's on it. He's going to fix the problems on the streets of King County. Okay, on a much lighter note, you have picked the final four in Monson Madness.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
So, we have four sound bites from 2018 that you have selected as your favorites. We started with 32, and now we are down to the final four. And my goodness, this is the first time this has ever happened, Nicole. All four one seeds have advanced to the final four.
They were pretty clear favorites.
I didn't see the vote breakdown.
I'm not sure about that, but they were pretty clear favorites of ours.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So our seating committee thought these were the four best of the year, and you agreed with your votes. So now you got to get us our two finalists. And in one of the regions, it's the woman named Diane who called in to tell Ursula how annoyed she was with Ursula and Nicole because occasionally they disagree with me on the show.
Ursula, Diane. I've called you before, 425-79. I just heard you say to Dory, you know, no, not everybody thinks the way you do. Hey, you know, this guy is your boss. This is the guy who made this program that you came on, okay? You didn't make it. He did, and the success of it. How damn stupid. I take back my apology to you that I made a while ago about Oprah running. Donald Trump wiped out 17 expert politicians.
Okay, let me jump forward here.
That this guy will be doing and knowing. How absurd and stupid can you be? Get real, Ursula, and I will go on until I'm cut off about this because I am so peeved at you and that idiot producer, you know, overnight successes who don't go, you know, for 15 years and get the material and get the knowledge and the expertise that come in as so-called producers, and they think because they have a title, they know everything. And quit saying these things to Dory. Just because Dory and everything you say so doesn't mean it's okay. He's the one running that show.
You know, this one makes me uncomfortable every time I play it.
Oh, I love it.
I know you guys do.
I love it so much.
It makes me horribly, horribly uncomfortable.
The way she says I'm an idiot, like,
I know
that. Idiot.
Oh,
there's so much behind it.
No, it just makes me horribly uncomfortable.
And just to follow up on that, I did talk to her the next day. And
right.
I told her we were going to air it. And
oh, I know.
She said, you know, she probably said some things she shouldn't, but, you know.
So, you know, the name Diane, though, has become very popular associated with the show.
Oh, I know.
And it's now become a verb, too. Like, you've been Diane.
Yes, I know it.
I wonder if she's listening. Diane, let us know if you're listening.
I just am not comfortable with that one. So that's in the final four, and it's up against another one that I'm not comfortable with, where the guy I grew up next to in Ballard, who still lived there as of a few months ago, his first name was Richard. He went by Dick. And there was a story on the news that his house was filled with mold, and it might have to be torn down. And the guy still lived there. So I saw this news story, and I go, whoa, I mean, literally right next door to the house I grew up in Ballard. And when I tried to talk about it on the air, it just came out wrong. When I was a little boy, I would send pizzas and taxi cabs to the guy who we were always feuding with and fighting with, and he was drinking every day. And the guy still lived in the house until just a few months ago. And imagine my shock when I saw my boyhood neighbor's Dick. That's his name. Wait a second. My boyhood neighbor, Dick's house.
Wow.
Dick is his name.
Whoa.
Dick is his name.
Yes.
That's a drop.
No. It should be a dump. It was an innocent mistake by me, for crying out loud. So Diane against my boyhood neighbor's Richard. That's one of the semifinal matchups in Monson Madness. So go vote right now. MyNorthwest.com, Dory Monson show page, or Facebook.com/Dory Monson. That is the big lead coming up right after the news. An exclusive talk with Tim Iman about how his activism is destroying his personal life. We'll have an up-close and personal chat with him next on the Dory Monson Show. Last week, you may have heard me talk about Tim Iman. We had gotten an email, everybody in the media had gotten an email from Tim about, the headline was, "The government's brutal 6-year persecution of me and my family has resulted in bankruptcy and divorce." And we reached out to Tim. He was not able to come on with us that day, but he is today. Tim Iman joins us. Hey, Tim, good to talk to you.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks.
I hear that you heard my comments about you the day that email went out.
That's correct.
Okay. Let me get into that a little bit, because I know you have some other things you want to talk about and things that I support, like $30 tabs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the email you sent out, first of all, it's bankruptcy and divorce. There's a lot of really personal stuff you were sharing there, and you made it sound like Bob Ferguson, the attorney general, is on a vindictive campaign against you, and that has torn apart your family and torn apart your personal finances. Is that what you're telling us?
Absolutely. And the one thing I'd want to clarify is that I send out emails to all of our supporters all the time.
Right.
And I always CC the media whenever something goes out. And whenever I communicate with our supporters, and there's like 30 or 40,000 of them on our list, every one of them is getting the same thing. And I just wanted to be honest with them, let them know what was going on, let them be the first ones to hear it, and basically not have to talk about it after you send that thing out. But here it is a week later, and so we'll talk about it. But that's what the scoop was. It wasn't like a press release. It was
right.
More of a communication to supporters, but I wanted the media to see it as well.
Okay, and I'll tell you what I said on the air, and I know you heard it.
Mm-hmm.
I said that I find you exasperating, because you're really good at getting publicity, and I've supported, I think, more than half of your initiatives, but I don't blindly support them, and I've not supported all of them, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always given you a platform, and yet you are often in the news for, you know, personal reasons, but all the personal stuff is connected to you being this, you know, tax protester, and now what you say is Bob Ferguson's, you know, vendetta against you. And it's challenging for me to give you a platform when you want to come on to talk about $30 tabs, but when you're in the news for bankruptcy and divorce, you didn't want to come on. And, you know, I know you get the media really well, but I assume you understand why that's somewhat exasperating for someone like me who, you know, has pretty consistently given you a platform over the years.
Well, absolutely. And whenever it comes to our $30 tabs initiative or blocking them from having a chance to get their big pay raises and all the things that I'm involved with, even my legal defense fund with Bob Ferguson, absolutely. I want lots of publicity, and I want to go on the radio and talk about it. Talking about bankruptcy, divorce, and all these personal issues isn't necessarily something that I want to have a whole lot of publicity about. But nonetheless, I think it was important for everyone to know what was going on, so they'd hear it from me first. And, you know, I just think it was really important for that level of, you know, transparency with our supporters, just to let them know what's going on. I think a lot of people thought there was some kind of whorish detail to it. You know, why are you getting into all these personal things? But,
right.
You know, I tried to draw the line as best I could to not get into absolutely everything, but to let people know that bankruptcy has huge implications, and certainly divorce does as well, and it all is 100% related to the six-year persecution of me and my family by the Attorney General.
Okay, and the day I said I was exasperated with you, I think you probably also heard me say that I can certainly picture Bob Ferguson going after you because of, you know, what you support and who you are, because I think Bob Ferguson's a very dangerous politician. I think he's maybe the most dangerous that we've had in our region because he uses the AG's office as a weapon against the people who do not agree with him ideologically, and he's a protection racket for groups like Sound Transit and others that he thinks he's going to need to climb the ladder. So, explain why Bob Ferguson, why you, and back up that Bob Ferguson, his persecution of you has torn apart your family like this.
Well, I think it's really important for people to understand that having a six-year government investigation or prosecution is kind of unusual. I mean, that's not the norm. It has gone on and on and on. And what the boiling point was for me, which took me into bankruptcy, was the fact that the Attorney General saw that there was going to be a hearing on the adjudication of the case in November. And discovery, which is where you basically ask for everything that you ever wanted, plus stuff that's not even remotely relevant to a case, you can really drive up somebody's legal costs. And I had been cranking out legal expenses close to about $80,000 per month leading up to this thing. But nonetheless, I was on track to be able to handle it. But he decided to pile on and ask the court for a three-month extension. And my lawyer said, if you do that, we're going to lose this November court date. And the judge granted the extension anyway, and the case was then extended to January of 2020. So it would be an eight-year process. And I subsequently learned that the AG's office was spending about $100,000 per month doing the prosecution. They had literally bankrupted their own government agency doing this one case and only this one case. And I just want to highlight the fact, this is unusual. Usually an attorney general has multiple cases that they spend money on. He spent all the money just on this one. And he succeeded in getting me to file bankruptcy because there's no way that I could possibly be able to afford this level of intense litigation and exploration and full-on, you know, attack and be able to keep up while he's got taxpayers paying his lawyers, where I had to essentially use my own resources and privately fundraise for a legal defense fund to pay for mine.
And I want to clarify, because it's just one of my pet peeves. You said he has literally bankrupted his own agency. They're not bankrupt. I mean, they have an unlimited source of funds because of tax.
They went $1 million over their budget of what was allowed to be able to be spent this year, and they're going to the next legislative session saying, we overspent our budget close to $1 million. So I would say that's bankrupt, but it's the same argument that is Jay Inslee spending, what is it, $400,000 over his travel budget, traveling the nation, running for president. It's the same idea.
Okay. Bob Ferguson has...
Fair point. He didn't bankrupt the government. He only overspent by close to $1 million.
Okay, Bob Ferguson says that the reason for all of this is that you have not turned over all the documents and bank records and everything else that they've been demanding of you.
And it's not true. So we turned it all over, did throughout the process. But unfortunately, when you're dealing with an attorney general that keeps moving the goalposts, asking for information. You turn it over. He said, that's not enough. I want even more. It's just a constant effort to keep up with it. Just to give one example, we ended up having like a million documents on my computer. My lawyers said, we just can't turn over a million documents to the attorney general's office. We have to review all those before they get turned over to see if they're relevant to the case. That alone ended up causing huge delays. But in the midst of trying to keep up with those requests, the AG's office hit my lawyers with 51 different motions in about a two-month period of time. One of those was a question of whether or not I was truly married to my wife or not. And we had to battle over that one as one of 51 motions going on at the same time. The judge didn't care that they were overwhelmed. That's what lawyers do. But the reality was that escalation caused my cost to go through the roof, ended up reaching the point where I just couldn't keep up anymore. And so I eventually went with bankruptcy, because you just can't keep up with an entity that has an unlimited supply of money. Even when they overspend, they don't really care.
And like I said,
end of the day, it was just too much.
I can picture Bob Ferguson trying to destroy somebody who wants to cut off their lifeblood of money to the state. So I can get that. Hey, Tim, hold on. I want to get into more of this with you. Tim Iman is with us. He is telling us that his political activism has cost him a bankruptcy and now divorce. And we will continue the conversation with Tim Iman in just a moment as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. All right, continuing our conversation with Tim Iman. And last week, Tim sent out an email that said, because of AG Bob Ferguson's vendetta against him because of his anti-tax activism, that he has filed for bankruptcy, Tim has, and for divorce. And when you wouldn't come on last week with me, Tim, I said you were exasperating. The other thing I said, Tim, is you have so many haters. You have so many. I mean, you have become, for you know, a generation of politicians, anytime there's any funding shortfall, they say it's Tim Iman's fault, even though all you do is give the voters the option to say no to stuff. And I understand that. When you have so many people who love to hate you, why put the divorce info out there? Why give your haters some, you know, this cudgel that they can use to smack you over the head?
I think, again, it's important to tell everybody the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And the reality is, what really broke me wasn't just the financial side, was that he wasn't satisfied just going after me. He decided to go after my wife and drag her into depositions and interrogations, and it was leading up to this. This had been going on for a long, long, long period of time. And my wife is a very private person. She has serious health challenges, and I was doing everything I could to try and protect her from this. But nonetheless, just the intense pressure and the intense stress and strain of the entire thing built up to the point where it caused us to go in this new direction. It's not a good, positive thing, but I'd rather get it all out all at once, rather than 3 months later, people reading about it in the, you know, Snohomish County courthouse, that there was this file of dissolution of marriage. Like I'm happy about it. It's not like it's something I'm bragging about, but I think it's important to get the facts out as soon as you can. And bankruptcy and divorce are both married together in the sense that they're all the impetus for both of them was this jihad.
Where are you at in the $30 tabs thing right now?
Rocking and rolling. We are literally 20 days left. And throughout this nightmare, the only thing that has kept me kind of going was at least that I was doing something productive. So my wife and I ended up loaning the campaign $500,000 when we sold off our retirement fund. And we loaned the campaign that money. We are literally 94% of the way there to collecting enough signatures to qualify for the ballot. We have 20 days left. We encourage people to go to 30tabs.com. That's 30tabs.com. Go there. You can sign up online. And if you want petitions, we can certainly still mail you those. But 20 days, January 3rd, we're going to be turning in signatures, and we want to make sure we turn in enough to qualify this thing for the ballot. And it is delicious satisfaction that despite everything in the kitchen sink getting thrown at us, to be able to qualify an initiative under this kind of siege is going to be nothing but a miraculous accomplishment if we can actually pull it off.
Okay, we have just moments left, but what's this event you got tonight?
It's really interesting. These same politicians, whether it's Inslee, whether it's Ferguson, are up for about 20% pay raises from this regular citizen salary commission, which is a complete joke. And it's totally rigged. One of the board members is the husband of a state Supreme Court justice that would get the raises that they're proposing. We have a website called givethemnothing.com. GiveThemNothing.com. It is going to be a referendum on overturning whatever pay raises they get. Inslee would have to suffer through at $354,000 over the next 2 years if he doesn't get a pay raise while he runs for president. Bob Ferguson, while he's suing Trump and all these other people, is going to have to suffer on a paltry $320,000 over the next 2 years. Our position is they knew their salary when they ran. They don't deserve a raise. And so we encourage people to go to GiveThemNothing.com. Okay. Sign up online, and you can help us make sure that we veto any tax, any pay raises, any bonuses that these guys get moving forward. And tonight is a public hearing down in Vancouver, Washington, that I'm driving to, where I'll testify. I went to the one in Spokane. It was a joke. I was the only citizen to testify. The only way people are ever going to be able to hear about this is to go to givethemnothing.com and overturn whatever pay raises these guys end up coming up with.
Hey, Tim, I truly only have a few seconds left, but I got to ask you. So you've spent pretty much your whole life fighting for these initiatives and trying to reduce the money flow. And you say you've been the target of a jihad by Bob Ferguson. You tell us that it's cost your marriage and bankruptcy, and I heard the emotion in your voice. Is it worth it? I mean, to go up against the government as you have, when you take stock in full of your life, has that been worth it with the toll that you tell me it's taken on you?
It's insane, but I think I've chosen a life of a political activist, and really nothing gives me greater satisfaction than doing it. But I got to be honest with you. One of the motivating factors of continuing is that's exactly what Bob Ferguson wants, is to stop it, is to shut it down. His lawsuit wasn't about getting me to pay a fine. He has in the lawsuit a lifetime ban on all future political activity. And if I succumb to that and basically roll over for that, who's next? It's going to be Dory Monson next. It's going to be John Carlson next. It's going to be Jason Rance next. Anybody that opposes the government, if they can shut down one of us, they can shut down all of us. And is it worth it? That's impossible to answer. Tremendous sacrifices in doing it, but at the end of the day, it's the life I've chosen, and I think, you know, I don't want to sound too melodramatic, but I really think this is my role in this world, is to do this stuff, and I can't give that up.
I got you. Okay. Hey, I appreciate the honest conversation about all of this, Tim.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks a lot, and tonight at Vancouver, they're Hilton down there. If anybody's down in Vancouver, join me between 6 and 8 p.m., and we'll tell them that we don't think these guys deserve any raises.
All right, givethemnothing.com. Got it. All right, Tim Iman, appreciate it, Tim. Thanks for coming on with me. I'd love to hear your thoughts on all of this. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. And we have the Fastest 15 coming up next on the Dory Monson Show.